Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for October 14th. Welcome, Tim and Catherine Smith.
Hello.
Good evening.
Yes, well, Catherine, thank you for filling in again. You're becoming a bit of a regular.
I'm pleased to it.
Yes, well, I'm glad you could make it. We have a good show that came together. A lot of different things were going on. I was almost down over at Atlanta at a wrestling card, so I had to call in live from the Gwinnett Center where the wrestling pay-per-view was going on, but that was averted. And then, Tim, I know you've had a long work week. You've worked over, 70 hours or so?
Oh, yeah. I'm like the guy on the Time to Make the Donuts commercial. I'm afraid I'm going to meet myself at the door.
Yeah, but it's always good to have a working man working hard on the overtime pay on a Democratic show.
There we go.
Yes. Well, a lot of topics to cover. Also, just to go ahead and preview our guest, we're going to have Melanie Gu, who's the head of Georgians for Hillary Clinton. I may have not gotten the exact title of that group down yet. She's going to call in and talk about the really huge endorsement. And then Robert Novak, who is challenging Jim Marshall in the 8th District, is going to call in later in the show. So two big guests. And also, I'll go ahead and let everybody know early in the show that we've secured Del Cardwell, the final Democratic nominee of the first wave of nominees, I will say, for the Democratic nomination, because I know there's still a candidate or three floating out there that may jump in. But the first wave, I guess you would say, Mr. Cardwell will be the final piece to that puzzle. But let's just get in the topics. I'll go ahead and tell you, I noticed that one topic that's on everybody's mind is the water shortage. And it seems like, and I think this is a positive, that everybody's kind of on the same page to an extent. You know, everybody agrees it's a problem. No one's, you know, like, doesn't seem to be like a Democratic solution or a Republican solution. Everybody sees that we have to conserve and I guess just pray for rain as the end solution, but at least for the short term. What do y'all think of this shortage and how it's being played out in the political arena?
Oh, wow. that's a tough one, David. I did notice that the governor has started some saber rattling with a Corps of Engineers essentially threatening to bring suit on behalf of the state against them. Because of the water that they are allowing out of the Buford Dam into the Chattahoochee. Did y'all hear about that?
Yes, there's kind of two pieces to what Sonny Perdue is doing. Apparently one piece is that the Corps of Engineers, at some time ago, before this drought really started, they like let out 1 billion gallons. I may have my number on, maybe 1 million. I mean, I know that's a big difference, but it's just an incredible amount of gallons of water out they shouldn't have, and that was like the big faux pas that he's after them about. Then there's another situation he's kind of at, and I'll have to say he's kind of on target on this one. Alabama has no watering restrictions, and they're basically pulling from the same pool in the Allatoona, Etowah, Coosa Basin that a lot of Georgia pulls from, and if they don't have any watering restrictions and we're conserving water, that's not quite fair, but I guess that's when it comes down to the state's rights for interstate resources. Things don't work out. It almost seems like something the Department of the Interior should have to get involved in.
Yeah, well, this water, the situation with water, especially in this part of the country, and well, out west as well, is going to be a really important issue going forward. Obviously, it's reached a pretty important position right now, and I mean, I was surprised on the morning news. I watch, you know, like ABC News in the morning for a few minutes, and it was all over the news on Thursday and Friday about Georgia's water shortage. And I was talking with someone yesterday, and we were saying, you know, can outdoor watering really make that big of a difference? I mean, I'm sure I'm not saying we shouldn't restrict out, you know, ban outdoor watering, but I think we're going to have to look at some other restrictions as well, I would imagine.
Yes, I mean, I think if you're getting your car washed at this point, that's a little bit irresponsible for something that's definitely not a need. I can understand people wanting to keep plants alive that they've planted more than watering their cars at this moment, because I could see that being the next step, shutting down car washes. Now, I really hate it for those fellows that run those businesses, but, you know, this has become to be hard times. I mean, with the mayor of Atlanta basically pleading outside the city limits to conserve water because it's gotten so dire, and we have 3 months left in Lake Lanier, and Allatoona's even in worse shape.
Yeah, it's a serious situation. It's just unfortunate that, I mean, maybe I haven't been paying attention, but I didn't realize it had reached such a serious level or lack thereof until very recently. I mean, I knew we had outdoor water bans and all that, but I think that people will pitch in if they understand the circumstances.
Yes, I guess that maybe in Northwest Georgia, and Tim, you can weigh in on this too. Water's been a bigger issue in our area because of what's called the interbasin transfer, even when we didn't have water shortages, because for, you know, nearly 10 years now, there's been certain counties, Forsyth, North Fulton, some of the other counties that are close to both the Etowah River and the Chattahoochee River, and what they wanted to do was pull drinking water from the Chattahoochee, use it, and then when they, you know, what's basically the wastewater, and of course it's purified, so it's not like they're just, you know, dumping raw sewage into the Etowah by any means, but they would take that water and then put it in the Etowah, which, you know, ecologically that's not sound to take it from one natural basin and then drop it in another. So that's been a big deal up here in Rome because the Etowah River is one of the two rivers that kind of forms our water system. Tim, do you kind of agree that that's why maybe we're more a little more attuned to it than people in other parts of the state?
Oh, yeah, because of the three rivers. Rome and Floyd County are very fortunate, David. And there's a couple of other things I want to mention here, too. Also, with a watering ban, we also now have a burning ban. There was actually a fellow up here in the county last week who was fined because he dug a pit in his yard and burned some trash in it. And the authorities came to his house and, you know, got him for it.
Yeah.
Another thing about the metro area that people are really going to start talking about, I think, are we to the point where the population has exceeded the water resources down there? And I think they're really going to start talking about this. And the metro area really is going to start looking elsewhere for water, including Rome and Floyd County. And I really hope Rome and Floyd County, you know, jealously guards their water. We've always been pretty particular about that up here.
Yes, well, and it may be that if there's some way to disperse some of the population across the state a little better, and we're not talking about, you know, north of Atlanta, but more so, you know, in other places way away. I mean, you know, try to build, you know, grow some business down in South Georgia where there is more resources and still a nice quality of living. I mean, near the coast of Georgia, you get just a few miles in from the coast, and it's very sparsely populated, but my goodness, the coast of Georgia is beautiful. I mean, if there's a good job down there, seems like people might, you know, that they might move jobs that way because, you know, obviously jobs are what move the population.
Yeah, but how do you handle that when over 40% of the people in Georgia live within about 50 miles of the state capital?
Well, 40% of the jobs are within so many miles of the state capital. I would contend. I think, you know, if you build a factory in a certain place, there's people that are going to move. I remember when they opened the Budweiser plant in Cartersville, there was somebody when I lived down in Jonesboro at that time, they're like, they opened that new Budweiser plant. I've heard they pay good. I may have to look into that. And so people will follow the jobs. I mean, you know, some will won't, but some will.
Well, there someone has been floating the idea, I can't remember where I heard this, of moving some of the state government offices to Macon for those reasons, you know, to encourage some business development in Macon.
Yes,
but
and
the costs of that are ridiculous.
Yes, and like while I thought it was terrible to see the Ford plant lost to Georgia, if it was truly lost, but then I did hear at one point they were going to move that Hayville plant or reopen a new plant in Meriwether County. Well, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Now, if we flat out just lose our plant, that's not good at all. But if our plant moves from highly populated, you know, Metro Atlanta to Meriwether County, which is a little farther out, now that almost creates a situation of exurbs. I'm talking more or less like moving the thing to Waycross or Albany or something, you know, much further away and distributing your population even more to, you know, as far as the resources go. Well, I believe Melanie Goose just joined us on the line, and she's was privileged to be in on all parts of a big event this week in national politics. Melanie, you there with us?
I am. How are you guys?
Doing good.
Hello, Melanie.
Good evening.
Well, I guess it was around Wednesday or Thursday, emails started coming from the Clinton campaign, and I noticed that some people were like, why don't we get more notice? And then I noticed that there was going to be a special guest there, John Lewis, and I had an inkling idea early on that what this would be, and it turned out to be the case. Tell us about this event.
Well, actually, the first email I received was from Congressman Lewis's office, and it was very cryptic. And it just said, it would be in your interest to be at Pascal's Restaurant on Friday, October 12th at 12 noon. The congressman will make an announcement about who he will endorse. And so, you know, there was some speculation. A few friends sent me some emails and said, you know, is this her? And then not very long afterwards, the Clinton campaign actually sent an email saying that Senator Clinton would be at Pascal's, but they didn't mention anything about John Lewis, and John Lewis's email didn't mention anything about her. So, you know, we just obviously put two and two together, but it was funny because Angela Trigg actually posted this entry on our blog saying, okay, we know that the congressman will be here to announce his endorsement. We know that Senator Clinton will be here at that same time. Putting those two knowns together, please RSVP here. So, and come to find out, I think she actually scooped the guys at the AJC who hadn't realized what was going on, and they posted a story on the Political Insider and linked to Angela's piece. But I tell you guys, I am still buzzing from that event. I mean, I can't, I think it might be a political high for me. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And I have to thank Bernita Smith. I mean, I'm going to be buying her lunches and dinners and drinks and everything from here on out. I mean, she made it possible for a lot of us to have a really wonderful experience. I mean, she put us up in that room on the second and third row of that event, and, you know, it was a historic event. There's no two ways about it. I mean, in the game of political endorsements, you know, to the extent that you think these things matter, I mean, a lot of people will say they don't or whatever, but, you know, in that game of political endorsements, I mean, an endorsement from John Lewis is sort of game over. And it was just huge. And, you know, I'm not easily impressed. I'm a pretty hard sell, and I'm not easily moved. And a lot of us were very moved in that room. I mean, several people, I looked over at Angela, and she was a bit weepy, and Nakima, and, you know, it was very moving. It was a very special day. And, you know, I can't thank Bernita enough for making it possible for me and Angela and Tim and a lot of other people to have shared in that day. It was very unique.
Yes, and yeah, I think you're right. It was a huge move. It was mentioned, you know, across the national scene, not just in Georgia, because obviously John Lewis is not just a congressman from Georgia. I mean, he's a national civil rights figure. And I will say this, I do think it is kind of a real closeout move. I mean, it doesn't close the door, but it's one of those that's a step in the process. And unfortunately, I will say it shouldn't be, and I'll kind of tell why. I think Barack Obama, it really hurts Barack Obama, but it shouldn't, because I believe Barack Obama's trying to run as the candidate of hope and change and a new vision. But a lot of folks are supporting him to be the black candidate. And because
yeah,
that's where his support base is coming from, to be the black candidate, this hurts him really bad. Now, if he was allowed to run his campaign more, it wouldn't be as devastating. What do y'all think about just the whole endorsement and the whole situation in general? Catherine?
I thought it was great. I hear a lot or read a lot about the group that I now call the Uber Left, who are, you know, they think Hillary is, you know, the devil incarnate. And a lot of them are Edwards or Barack Obama supporters, some Kucinich folks. And, you know, they're always posting stuff about how she's just not liberal enough or she's this or she's that. And so when I heard about this, I heard about it in a very similar way to Melanie. And I thought it was a really wonderful sort of affirmation of Senator Clinton's talent and experience and dedication to the, you know, liberal values that we all share, I think. So I think it was great, and I also think it was a great move for the African Americans who may be on the fence about the election. Melanie and I share a friendship with a wonderful woman who serves on the Fulton County Democratic Committee, and she's been a Hillary, so she's a wonderful African-American woman. She's been involved in the party for years. I won't reveal her name, but she's a good friend, and she's a Hillary supporter to the extent that, I don't know that she's, you know, really a huge supporter, but she was very excited when she heard about this because she knows a lot of African-Americans who really like Senator Clinton but have been hesitant because of the, you know, the feeling of supporting Barack Obama for solidarity. And so I think it's good. I think it was wonderful strategy from the Clinton campaign.
Yeah.
I have a lot of admiration for those people. They do a great job.
Well, they do, and I have to tell you, the event was so well run. I mean,
thanks to Bernita.
Well, yeah, and you know, just Bernita just fits right in with that team. I mean, it's just a well-oiled machine. I mean, she moves around the place like, you know, a cat. I mean, they all know what they're supposed to be doing, where they're supposed to be, where you're supposed to be. I mean, you know, don't take this wrong, but on some level, it's hard to realize it's actually a Democratic event because it is just so perfectly put together. And, you know, I think there was some disappointment on the part of people who couldn't make it because it was such short notice. Now, we had heard that the congressman's office was actually controlling the event. I have to say, I think there was a certain amount of strategy involved in that, too, because you can't announce events like this, you know, that are this sort of monumental too far in advance because then it gives the Obama and some of the other campaigns a chance to try and dominate the news cycle that day, which they did try to do anyway. I mean, I got home from the event and I started looking around at the news, and that was the day that they decided to drop, you know, a lot of people have been pressuring Obama to go after Clinton on the war, and that was the day they decided to drop that attack. So, you know, I think had any more notice been given, I think it just gives the other campaigns an opportunity to sort of seize that news cycle, which, again, I think is very smart. But it was a very diverse group. She didn't thank that many people, but she did thank Valerie Jackson was there. She thanked Ambassador Gordon Giffen, Dr. Barbara King, who she referred to as her very good friend, DPG Chair Jane Kidd, Herman Russell, and Congressman David Scott. Now, the sort of odd thing about that was that Congressman Scott didn't speak, but he was right there in the front row, and I was having lunch with some friends afterwards, and I said, you know, I'm still a little new to politics. Now, does the fact that Congressman Scott was there mean that he's endorsed her as well? And they said yes. So, and then come to find out, he, I guess, had spoken to some press people after the event and had confirmed that, yes, he did endorse her. I mean, I know a lot of us are not fans of his, but, you know, there you go. So.
Well, and I believe that means that Hank Johnson and Sanford Bishop are supporting Barack Obama. Lewis and Scott are supporting Hillary Clinton. Marshall is supporting Edwards. And has Barrow endorsed anyone?
Not to my knowledge.
Not that I know of.
So his endorsement's the last one to be had, I guess you'd say. You know, obviously, I think the two endorsers that are teams, if you will, are more critical at this point. But that is, I guess, the last shoe to drop, and there are no senators to endorse, so that leaves, I guess, statewide constitutional, which they're not federal, but still their endorsements would carry some clout in the state. Well, Tim, what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I was sitting here wondering something that maybe one of you could enlighten me on. Would this particular endorsement resonate with African-American voters in other states, or would you say this is a door slammer in Georgia only?
Oh, no, I think it resonates. I mean, everybody's saying she'll have Alabama now because of John Lewis's roots in Alabama. But he's recognized as a leader across around the world, really. He's recognized as a you know, peaceful leader around the world. So I think it has a national impact, definitely. That's my
opinion. I would agree, Tim. In fact, some of the news reports that I've read, you know, they refer to him as an icon. So I mean I think that pretty much says where he stands.
Well, he's my representative, and when I tell my friends around the country that, even those who are not nearly as inside baseball as I am or we are, they're always like, "Oh, you're so lucky to have John Lewis as a representative." So, and these are not, you know, political, you know, activists, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think you gave me the answer that I figured I would get. I had the privilege once, and David was there that night, of a hosting Representative Lewis up here in our county for a JJ dinner, and the aura around that man is incredible. And his words are strong words, and I'm to the point now where I have to say that if Senator Clinton wins Iowa, she runs the table.
And that's well, I think this announcement that's coming out, I guess it's officially going to be announced tomorrow, that John Edwards has gotten the SEIU endorsement in Iowa. I think that's really good news for the Edwards campaign. I'm a little confused about what that means because they're in a PAC, and he's not taking PAC money, so I don't know how that's going to work, but I think it's a good sign for him, and it may mean that the race in Iowa is a little less of a given.
Yes, well, his trend lines are not good in general, and also I believe the SEIU endorsement went to Howard Dean last time, so that's not a.
Yeah.
I mean, all
right.
Let's not go there. But
come
that's
on.
What I mean. It's not like you can, you know, not surpass that endorsement. I mean, it's not the kiss
right.
of death by any means either. I mean, obviously unions are organizers and. You'd rather have them than not have them, but I don't know that that's the killer. I will say something interesting. I heard the Chris Matthews show. They believe that Al Gore will not run for president, and he will endorse Barack Obama, and that could be an infusion of
That would be unfortunate. Yeah, that would be unfortunate.
Well, guys, he also endorsed Howard Dean.
Yeah.
By the way.
All right, Tim.
Well, I read an article, I think it was in the New York Times today, that he was considering running, but because he believes that Senator Clinton has such a lead that he doesn't want to challenge her.
Yeah.
He thought there was a chance that he could surpass her support, that he would. That's what I read in the New York Times today.
You know, I think a lot of people just underestimate the depth of her support. You know, I was talking to my husband about this yesterday. I think, you know, a lot of Democrats, too, are very concerned about her. And I feel like that they're basing their current opinion of her on, you know, maybe her impression that they had of her years ago. I mean, I think when you see her in person, a friend of mine told me this, when you see her in person, you will feel differently, and it does sort of reset your impression of her.
Yes, I think that's true, Melanie. Well, Melanie, I thank you for coming on and telling us about the past well, this
just,
event.
Before I sign off, I just want to give a little shout-out to Benson Monica, who did a wonderful job. He took photos and live blogs and everything, and Grace and Daughter did as well, took video. And we've got everything linked up at GeorgiaForHillary.com. And also wanted to thank Will Folks and his beautiful daughter, Hillary. They came out. They were wonderful. So,
yes.
Anyway, well, thank you guys for having me.
Sure thing. And come again with the next big event that happens.
Okay.
I'd like to welcome in congressional candidate Robert Novak. Robert, hi, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hello, Robert.
So, you've decided to run for office down in Georgia's 8th District. Tell us a little about yourself.
I'd say mainly throughout my life I've been a teacher. I've taught from grades 2 to graduate school from ages 6 to 66. So that's been the overreaching impulse of my life. I've done other things too. I've worked in software. I've been in retail. I've been self-employed, but basically teaching, and most recently teaching in Central Georgia in the elementary schools.
So just an elementary classroom teacher or a certain subject? Or?
Elementary classroom teacher who taught everything, yes. It's grades 2 through 5. Yes, sir.
Yes, okay. Well, why did you decide to get into this race?
I think there are a number of reasons. One is that I felt that the country's dedication to civil and human rights was quickly eroding because of the present administration and the Congress, and whittling away at the separation of powers, checks and balances. And then in my own experience in the classroom, I was fighting situations, the No Child Left Behind Act, and noticing that a lot of my children weren't getting the care that I think they should be getting. Their parents were in kind of a no man's land between financially. They weren't eligible for Medicaid, and yet they could not afford the medications that their children needed. And so not only did it make it hard for that specific child, but for myself and for the class as a whole. And also in the schools where I teach, I would like to see, some of them come in at very, because of their environments, they come in handicapped. We have people, for instance, who come to kindergarten not knowing their colors. And that's not their fault. And my goal would be to have people coming out of, let's say, the sixth grade with equal chance for opportunity in our society and going on to school and being successful.
Yeah.
So those are the two things. I was at foreign affairs and education.
Certainly. Well, we also have on here Tim Shiflett from Chattooga County and Catherine Smith from Atlanta, who's on the state committee. Catherine, giving classes for Robert. Questions for Robert.
Hey, Robert, how are you doing?
Good, good. Very well, thank you.
I just was wondering, I was thinking about you today when I was preparing for this show, and I know that I see you a lot in Atlanta, and I'm always happy to see you, and I'm always
thank
glad
you,
when
thank
people
you.
Come out.
Thank you.
I've always believed that the first thing to do is to just show up. I think that's a really important part of being a Democrat. I'm just wondering if you're showing up as much in your district and doing the same kind of outreach and talking with people as you do when I see you here in the metro area, and wondering how that's going for you.
Yes, I've been spending some time at the fair. I assume that's what you mean, the state fair in Perry, meeting people who come. The Houston County Democrats have a booth down there. I have started hitting the streets, so to speak, and speaking with people in their work. I have been doing that, too. I have meetings scheduled with the local union here week after next. I have a meeting scheduled with the Macon Democrats. We have a politics at lunch.
Oh, yeah, I'm
meeting.
Familiar with that group.
Yeah, so I have been, getting around. Yeah.
And how is it going?
Oh, it's going to be going very well. I mean, it's slow and it's new to me. I do talking to people. I found out that health care really is a big issue. I've been, of course, concerned health care for my kids. When I say my kids, the children in the schools. But it seems to be on many, many people's minds, not only for the children, but for themselves.
Well, good.
I'm learning that, yes.
Yes, but, well, Tim, do you have any questions?
Yes, sir, just a couple. I was wondering, since you're in the role of challenger, would you prefer a one-on-one race, or do you prefer a multi-candidate primary, and why?
Oh, I hadn't thought of it in those terms. I just think that it's good for people to have a choice, and the more choices they have, the better. So, I mean, obviously, if you get to be 15, things might get out of control. But if you're talking the distance between 2 and 3, then I think that would be, I think 3 would be a lot of fun, if that's what you mean.
Yes, sir. What I was wondering was how do you think it would affect the race itself as far as you're concerned? Would it help you more to just go one-on-one with Representative Marshall, or would it be better to have more candidates in the race?
I don't know. I think that if people like me, they'll vote for me. I don't see any other candidate who approaches the issues quite like I do. Now, that's not saying that there might be 2 or 3 more entering that will say exactly what I have to say, but I doubt that would be the case. So I don't think it would harm me one way or another.
Okay. And I have just one more question I like to ask a lot of the guests that come on here, this particular question, and that is, do you have a favorite presidential candidate, and who is that?
Well, that is a tough one. You know, I think, I talk about the Democrats, of course, I think they all have their strengths, and I think that no matter who gets the nomination, we can be proud that they're representing the party. So, no, I don't have a favorite.
Okay. Thanks, David.
Yes.
Yes. Well, Mr. Novak, I guess we were a little surprised by someone getting in the race in a district where it was already represented by a Democrat, given our situation.
Yes.
You running, is it more of a case where if you lived in a district where there was not a Democratic representative, you would have run anyway and sought the nomination? Or is it because of Representative Marshall that you're running?
You know, that's a tough question. Last year, when I started getting a little upset with the way things were going, I started visiting the Houston County Democrats, attending their meetings. And the more I talked to people, the more I felt that Democrats in this area would like to have an option. And though I know it's a jump for me, rather than complain about things, I said, well, if people want an option and I want an option, why shouldn't I be that option? I imagine that if I had been in a district where there hadn't been a Democrat running, I would probably run too. I just think it's time. I've been living a long time. I've had experiences that I think that a lot of people in Congress have not had. I have lived in a country where there's terrorism going on, where bombs go off in the neighboring town. I've lived in the Middle East. So when we went to Iraq or were thinking about it, I was saying to myself, oh, no, no, just don't get into that. Because I've lived there, not in Iraq, but in Saudi Arabia. So I think that wide life experience gives me a lot of qualities which many of the representatives in Congress don't have. And I'm, for one, just like a lot of the Congress, a lot of the population, just really don't think they're doing a very good job in Washington on a lot of issues.
Yes. Well, you mentioned two issues in particular, the war in Iraq and children's health care.
Yes.
These are two issues in which Congressman Marshall's been a little bit to the right of center. If Congressman Marshall were to, you know, call you and have a sit-down meeting and say, Robert, if I change my position on one of these issues, would you drop out of the race and not run? What would you say about that?
Ooh, that's a hypothetical situation. And I don't think that we could probably come to a meeting of the minds, but I hadn't even thought of that, and I have to give that some thought.
Okay, I mean, I just, you know, I'm not saying that's going to happen.
Yes.
It just seems like it's a hypothetical situation where
But I will say that also, I mean, no matter what happens in the race, whomever wins, that we pull together at the end and go forward from there. You know what I'm saying?
You're basically saying you're committed, no matter who wins the primary, you're going to support the Democratic nominee?
Oh, yes. There's no doubt in my mind.
Certainly. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. What are some other things that you have to tell us?
Well, the other issue I have that beginning to be more and more important to me is what people call the climate crisis, global warming. And because I feel that all these other issues are moot if Georgia turns into a desert. We can forget about schooling. We can forget about everything, practically. And it's not, this global warming is not just the province of scientists in the colleges. You know, the Army is doing some very serious studies of it because of the ramifications of huge population movements. And if we think that immigration is a thing we have to deal with now, with, let's say, 100,000 coming over a year, 200,000, if South America can no longer provide for its population and they start moving north, if the United States is still an option, we'll be dealing with millions and millions of people. I'm not saying that will happen, but it's just the size, the magnitude of the problem, I don't think people have gotten their arms around yet, and it's something that has to be solved not only in this country, but with international cooperation. And I think we have to deal with it, I mean, starting tomorrow. And I don't see that, I don't see discussion of it at that level or with that passion either in the administration or in the Congress.
Yeah. Well, tell us, you went to the fair. How did the Georgia State Fair go?
I made some nice contacts. It was nice to see the people. I think it's admirable that the Houston County has a booth there every year. And it's being new, it's a learning experience for me, just meeting people. I saw a teacher who is had enough and resigning because of No Child Left Behind. I saw some people who came back from Europe and couldn't believe that we're not recycling more, and they'd lived in Europe for a while where they're much more, I think, environmentally conscious, and they were saying they couldn't believe that they don't recycle more in this area, and of course they're very worried. So it's nice to, the politics should be a two-way street, and I have my issues, and I'm learning about other issues too. And listening too. It should always be a two-way street, I think.
Yes. Well, tell us kind of about the inside baseball, the dynamics of your campaign, as far as just the actual mechanics of it. What's going on with your campaign?
Campaign is just getting off the ground. We have the website up. We have some literature printed. We're doing some fundraising. And it's going to be a lot of hitting the streets. I want to be able to visit all the counties in my district, visit the Democrats where they have committees, and meet with people at the very local level, let's say the clubs, like the Kiwanis clubs, the churches, the neighborhood associations. Mr. Marshall has, of course, a great name recognition, which I don't have. The only recognition I have is in with the teachers in two school systems. And it'll be a lot of hard work, but I think that's the great thing about American democracy, that it can still be done that way.
Yes, your district's quite long, goes from Newton County and Butts County, which I guess is
exurban
metro Atlanta, all the way down to Colquitt, which is Moultrie, which is almost to the
Florida
state line.
That's right. It's kind of long and slim, like myself. That's right. Fits
yes.
me good tea.
And, you were saying you're meeting with different places that have Democratic committees. Keith Moffitt's the 8th congressional chair. Have you had a chance to sit down with Keith?
I have not.
No. Okay, because I was interested how he felt about, your candidacy and, I guess, the multi-candidate primary.
Right. I haven't. I've spoken to some people who are overjoyed, and some people are wary, but that's not going to stop me one way or the other. Yes.
Yes, and so I just was curious. Being a congressional chair myself, I understand usually candidates, get a hold of you one way or the other and talk with you. I just didn't know if you'd had that chance to have that conversation yet.
I have not, no.
Okay. Well, if someone wanted to get involved in the campaign, what are some ways they could do that?
Well, the best way, I think, to do is to go to the website. It's Novak for Congress, spelled, it's a German spelling of a name. It's N-O-W-A-K for Congress, and one can get involved in a number of ways. One can sign up to volunteer, and one can always help with the finances by making a contribution. So there are two ways one can help. And if you sign up to volunteer, then we will find things for people to do. There could be canvassing, there could be help around the office, whatever. So that's what I would suggest.
Yes. Well, before we let you go, Catherine, Tim, any more questions?
No, I just want to express my thanks to you for stepping up and you know, putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak, and running when you thought there was a need. I think that it's really admirable, and it's like you, as you know, it's going to be a tough race, but I think it's great that you're doing this. It makes me very proud.
Well, thanks for saying that. I think that the fact that we can do this makes me proud of being in this country, because it can't happen every place.
Oh, and Mr. Novak, I might also ask you before you leave us to go ahead one more time and give us your website address and any contact numbers that you might have.
Okay. Website address is Novak for Congress, and that's spelled N-O-W-A-K for F-O-R, Congress, as it usually is. We do have a phone number, the office phone number, and that is 478-978-5620.
Okay.
Yes. And thank you very much.
Yes, well, thank you for coming on, and we'll be watching your campaign on the Internet and other places.
Great, great. Hope you see a surge, as we say. Yes.
Okay. Thank you for coming on, sir.
Thank you for having me, all of you. Appreciate it.
Yes. Well, another competitive race, which makes, I guess, life at the Kudzu Vine more interesting, because it gives us more races to talk about and activity. Any thoughts about the interview?
Well, I'm glad that he realizes it's going to be tough, but I really believe what I said, that, you know, I think it's great that people stand up and, you know, stand for something that they believe in, and even though they know it's going to be tough, I think he knew that going in, and I think it's great. It gives people a chance. Hopefully it'll bring some issues to the table that maybe wouldn't be discussed if he weren't running, so I think that's good.
I was wondering how the organized Democrats in that area would come down on this race.
Well, that's kind of why I asked the question about as he met with Keith. I mean, to me, it'd be very interesting to see. I don't know what I'd do with a situation like this. I mean, I tell you what, having a Democratic congressman over Phil Gingrey would be enough to make for me to ask for.
I got to be honest, David. I know that as a county chair and what our bylaws say, that, of course, I would never make a public endorsement. But I guarantee you I know what I'd do in that district when I got in the voting booth.
Yeah.
And I will make no further comment on that.
Yes. Well, I guess there were still some other topics that we hadn't gotten to. The show's 44 minutes old, and we've covered three topics. I can tell you how deep those topics are. But there was an ad that came out in the Louisiana governor's race, and I'm sure people were going, well, why does this have to do with Georgia politics, although we do cover Southern politics? And it was on behalf of Bobby Jindal, running for governor of Louisiana. And in this ad, they had stock footage from the University of Kentucky. And I guess that was because they probably, in the Kentucky ad on behalf of, I believe, the governor's Ernie Fletcher. They likely had the same stock footage and got lazy, whoever is at the media company, and left the footage in. Well, obviously, when that ad was released earlier in the week, that was not good. But then given that last Saturday, LSU's number one ranked football team was knocked off by Kentucky, that problem just got a whole lot worse because obviously the other campaigns, two Democratic campaigns and one other Republican campaign in that open primary, are going to use that against Jindal. And he, while he's in, comfortably in the lead, he's not over the 50% threshold to avoid a runoff. And obviously you really don't want to have to go and have another campaign because crazy things can happen, like people can release ads against the state's football team, among other things. But how this faux pas relates to Georgia, the head of the Republican Governors Association is our own Sonny Perdue, and the executive director is his right-hand man, Nick Ayers, who ran his campaign, and they're kind of taking the blame on this one. Catherine, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, you know, I'm sorry, but I just cannot even think about football. I grew up in a, like, huge football town, college football town, Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I just have never been able to, I don't even get the game. So, but I know that people feel very strongly about their football teams, and it's usually a mistake to try to get in between it. So.
Yes, well, really the thing is not essentially, the football angle kind of makes it even juicier, but there's obviously something else besides just the football there. Tim, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, somebody certainly screwed up. That much is obvious. It was an RGA ad. Sonny does have a strong connection to it. Jindal has a more pressing problem between now and I believe the primary is next Saturday, right?
Yeah.
He's got to get over 50%. I know that the latest polls show that only one other opponent, a Democrat down there, has at least 10%, but still, you made an astute point, David. He does not want to be forced into a runoff, but because when you have a runoff, especially in a state like Louisiana, all bets are off.
Yes, by no means do I think that this, you know, it wouldn't flip the race to where Walter Bosso, I believe that's the Democrat, that just tells you how messed up the situation is in that state, that's our candidate. But if he, by no means is he going to jump over and, you know, surge to 30% and Jindal fall to 25 on this ad. It's more or less this holds Jindal to like 45 and then Bosso maybe, you know, starts to pick up undecideds and gets to, you know, 20, and then it's still like a 25-point gap. But then there's that extra time of campaigning, and this thing goes after. I guess it would actually be on election day in this case, the way they've moved their primary up. But it's and I guess the Times-Picayune in New Orleans said that this would be the suggestion that Bobby would root for any team over LSU could possibly be the lowest attack on his character yet. And, of course, that was not any other campaign doing that. That was Sonny Perdue on behalf of him. this is Sonny Perdue. While he's got a lot of flaws, he kind of gets those little things like supporting the football team or having pictures made with the Little League baseball team. He kind of gets those things about politics. So it's kind of interesting that he would be the one to or his people would be the one to mess this up.
Well,
and I think that if there is a runoff, I think that there's Democrats that around the country that might look at that and go, oh well, you know, maybe we have a shot. They might be able to, you know, get some money.
Yes, when something's the only game in town, it looks a lot more enticing than in other situations.
Yeah,
and there's another thing too. There's another race up in Kentucky, and Governor Fletcher is going to get beat. The latest poll, he's at 40%. The Republicans, frankly, need a win somewhere before this year is out. And if they can't get it in Louisiana, you talk about a dispirited party. What are they even going to have to hang their hats on as the new year turns over?
Oh, and basically it looks like what will happen is will pick up Kentucky. They'll pick up Louisiana. Mississippi will stay the same. Although there may be some down ballot races that tell us a little bit. Maybe we elect the first African American in Mississippi statewide, and Gary Anderson, that could be a positive thing. But if we really take over in Kentucky, that'll still be a good off year for us. And then, of course, there's legislative and mayoral races, different places.
Yeah. But what I'm saying, David, it's beyond that. They've got to win Louisiana.
Yeah.
This ain't a want to break even. They've just got to win it. And if they don't, get ready for the thumping of their lives.
They would be in serious trouble. I really think, honestly, that the more interesting race on the Louisiana ballot is going to be the lieutenant governor's race. Mitch Landrieu, how strong is he? If he, you know, wins this thing over 50% without a runoff, then that probably is pretty good for his sister. If he's kind of struggles a bit, then that could, spell a little bit of trouble for her. And that may be the only race, that Senate race, that the Democrats are in trouble in 2008. So I think that's one to watch, which, interestingly, that campaign is coming to Georgia in a weird way. One of the candidates is a country western singer, Sammy Charlie Kershaw. I may be saying that completely wrong, but he's playing at the North Georgia Fair instead of campaigning in Louisiana. I thought that was interesting that he chose to put that on the schedule. But that's the race to watch in that Louisiana primary. Well, Tim, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was going to say one more thing, David. We also want to see one more thing for the first time in the statewide race in Louisiana. How bad does the diminished population in the city of New Orleans hurt the Democrats statewide? We got to watch that as well.
Yes, because I guess there was not a statewide race. There were only there's been a mayoral race. There's been a congressional district race, but those were
right
inside Democratic primaries, if you will. Well, Tim, I guess it's coming to the time for the outrage of the week.
Okay, David, back on September 26th, Rush Limbaugh, on his little Republican talk show, called a group of veterans who opposed the Iraq war phony soldiers. Well, this made the network news, and we all heard about it. And then scores of enraged Democratic leaders demanded that Limbaugh apologize. Some of them even did so from the floor of the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate. And Limbaugh, in true form, tried to lie his way out of it by claiming that he was referring to only one anti-war activist. Well, I heard the transcript of the show, and that is just not true. Now for the part that some of you out there might not have heard about. Harry Reid wrote a letter co-signed by 41 Democratic senators to the CEO of Clear Channel, who syndicates Limbaugh's program. They asked that some punishment be forthcoming to Limbaugh, or that he be forced to apologize. Well, the guy responded by giving Limbaugh the letter. And now Limbaugh has announced with great fanfare that he's auctioning off the letter, with the proceeds going to a group that helps families of servicemen killed in combat. He's screaming that Democrats in the Senate want to censure him. No, they do not. They want what I want. And what I want is for this man to apologize to those veterans he defamed with his offensive remarks. I want him to accept responsibility for his actions. This guy dares to say anything about veterans? Of course. He was unable to serve during Vietnam because he had a bad back. Now, this is the same Limbaugh who screamed loudly when MoveOn.org's controversial ad titled "General Petraeus or General Betrayus" appeared. Yet, he referred to Chuck Hagel, another decorated combat veteran, as Senator Petraeus. And this is the same Limbaugh who flatly stated that anyone who opposed Bush on the Iraq war was unpatriotic. And this is the same Limbaugh who called congressional candidate Paul Hackett, another liberal Democrat, trying to hide behind a military uniform. There's a great new ad out. It features a fellow by the name of Brian McGuff, who is a severely wounded Iraq vet. Essentially, he tells Limbaugh to have the guts to call him a phony soldier to his face. Well, of course, that's not going to happen. Draft-dodging cowards like Limbaugh don't operate that way. That would require some modem of honor that he does not possess. And Limbaugh needs to know something else. The days when he could just smear someone and get away with it are over. Fully two-thirds of the American people want us out of Iraq within a year. So old Rush is right where he fits in as part of a big mouth and shrinking minority. I'd like to close with questions for my GOP friends out there. Is Rush Limbaugh the best you can now do? And are you comfortable having somebody like him to speak for you? If the Republicans answered either of those questions in the affirmative, then we all understand why you're taking such a beating at the polls, David.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, this guy gets all this attention, and he just says anything. He and the Ann Coulter, they're just... they'll say anything to stir people up. I mean, it's all shock radio, but then there are folks that, you know, believe in their causes that will defend them, even though they're getting paid to be entertainers and acting like these guys are telling the truth, and they're certainly not.
Well, Ann Coulter always seems to say something very outrageous about the time she's going to put out a book. and I just wondered if Limbaugh had one coming out soon.
That may be. Yeah, because he seems to, it's all about the dollar for him. You can just tell. It's not, I mean, he's genuinely a jerk, but a lot of the stuff he comes up with is just to stir up controversy. It's not that he, I just don't even talk much more about it, if you will. It's so sickening at times. Well, it's been another great show, and, you know, we had more topics to get to, but just not enough time with all the guests. But next week we have Del Cardwell, running for U.S. Senate, coming on the Kudzu Vine. So we hope everybody listens in, and, of course, tell your friends and podcast this thing and listen to it through the week. Tim, Catherine, thanks for filling in.
Thank you very much.
Anytime.
See you next week.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks. Good night.